Now, my studies are different than everybody else's studies, so don't expect to have heard any of this kind of stuff before. And sometimes I surprise myself. That's just the way it is. Okay, I'll try to stick to this thing because they said I ought to. And we'll see what happens. You all know Proverbs 31. We all like that one, don't we? For who can find a virtuous woman, right? And we all know that. And we all have it up on our kitchen cabinet or somewhere in the kitchen. And we all hope that our kids will say the things that they're supposed to say from that one, right? We all hope that. But think of the first line of it. For who can find a virtuous woman? What does that say to you? That they're hard to find, and there's a lot of women out there. How come that's so? Why is it so hard to find a virtuous woman? Oh, lands, I just resent that, and I resemble it all to pieces. And I tell you something other. The Bible resembles that all to pieces, too. In the beginning, in Genesis 1, we go along and we get the man, and he needs us. Isn't that special? He needs us. And what do? When we get the spotlight, we hand him the fruit. I mean, that's what we do. We're really good at it. We always hand our fellows the fruit. And sometimes it's good for them and sometimes it's not, but we do that, don't we? We have a way of handing our fellows the fruit. So we got to watch ourselves. We got to watch ourselves real well. Well, we have all through the Bible, all through the plan of salvation that's laid out for us, we have the bad'uns and the good'uns. We have the Bathshebas and the Delilahs and the Jezebels. But we also have the Esthers and the Ruths and Mary, the mother of Jesus. We have the good uns and we have the bad uns. So we're like that little poem, that little nursery rhyme that says, there was a little girl and she had a little curl right in the middle of her forehead. And when she was good, she was very, very good. But when she was bad, she was horrid. That was me all the time. I was the most horrid little girl. And my poor mama had me when she was way old. And my daddy was 11 years older than her. And so they were like grandparents raising me. And my grandpa told my mother one time when I was 8 years old, and she spanked me for something other, which I don't think I'll tell you about. But she spanked me real good, she always did. She was strong. And he said, Wani, her name was Juanita, he said, Wani, come back in here. You haven't got the job done. She needs another one. Did you see, that's because I stuck my tongue out at her and he saw it. I don't think she had got the job done. So she came back and she spanked me again. And he was still there. So I went into the closet to stick my tongue out. I was kind of hard-headed. I was the little girl with the curl right in the middle of her forehead. It was very, very hard. And you know, we as women, there's something like that in about all of us. I mean, I'm admitting to mine, but don't you suspect we can all be just about that hard-headed when we want to be? We can kind of give it up when we want to, and we kind of hold out when we want to, too. And we can be pretty stubborn. And that serves us well most of the time if we're God's children. And if we're trying to be good children, well, that can make us strong in the time of trials and tribulations. And it can make us really bad when we don't want to humble ourselves before the throne of God. So we really have to watch ourselves, because most of the time we're leading our fellows right along with us, just carrying a piece of fruit with us. Had you ever thought about that? We are. We're just leading them along, saying, come on, honey. Here it is. I know you'll like it. This is the way we're going to. This is where we're going to live. This is what we're going to do. This is how we're going to do it. And they may say, we're moving so-and-so, and we decide no, or we decide, okay, I'll go with you. And if we're the proper kind of ladies, we'll do it the proper way. But some of us hold out and we don't. And we just have this struggle all along the way because we've got that piece of fruit and we know we've got it. Ladies, we are so strong that we have to put ourselves into the submission that we're supposed to be in. But let's look at these ladies. Who were these ladies of the gospel? The ones who actually got to hear the voice of God on earth. Wow. That's amazing. Can you imagine? We don't get to hear from the Old Testament God speaking to our husbands. And we don't get to hear from the New Testament God speaking to us. But we got His Word, and it's very incredible. And we can live through all the different characters in it, and we can identify with most of them. But there is an incredible thing here. In these Gospels, there are only... Wait a minute. Okay, I was supposed to do that a long time ago. There are only 9 named women with their given names. These: Mary and Martha, the sisters of Lazarus, and we all know their stories. Am I right in the way? Am I supposed to down? Okay. I'm perfect?
Perfect.
That's the only time. Who hosted them in her home, sought Jesus. Look at what all He put up here for me. Prepared a meal where man. Isn't that good? That's impressive. I could just read it up there. Yeah, they did all that. We remember all those stories, okay? Salome, that's a nice name. Why don't we ever name our kids that? That's a neat one. Salome, who stood at the cross. I guess that's how you say it. I wouldn't want to say Salome. That's kind of like baloney, wouldn't it? Salome, who stood at the cross. We're going to hear about her a little bit more. Why did that come up? Okay. And certain women who had been healed of evil spirits and infirmities, Mary called Magdalene, out of whom had come 7 demons, and Joanna, the wife of Chusa, Herod's servant, and Susanna, and many others who provided for him from their steps. I know why he's got that up there now. It's because these three women are tied together. There are three that are named: Joanna, Susanna, and Mary Magdalene. So then, Joanna, healed of demons, cared for Jesus' ministry from her substance, and came to anoint the body of Jesus. And Susanna, healed of demons, and cared for Jesus' ministry from her substance. We don't ever hear much about them. I don't know if y'all do at your congregation, but not much is ever said about those two. But had you ever thought that Jesus traveled all around and, you know, He could have just always done the loaf and fish thing, you know? But he let women give from their substance and people donate to the ministry from His substance. He allowed it. Just like God doesn't need our money, but He allows it because it's good for us to give it. And Mary Magdalene, she gets her own thing here, doesn't she? Relieved of 7 demons, right? Ha ha, He didn't put 7. She had 7 demons. Stood at the cross, followed Jesus' body to the tomb, visited the tomb to anoint the body, and He appeared to her first. Why do you think that's funny? I got something He didn't get. It is funny. Listen, this is a game He and I play all our life. He uses me. I'll tell you how He uses me. He likes to argue with me. He will get me riled up. And He likes that, getting me riled up. And then He starts writing down what I'm saying. And then He goes and prepares the arguments to stand up to all the things I say. It just gets me so upset. I don't like to argue, and it's the truth. I'm telling y'all, wait a minute. This isn't being recorded, is it? Elizabeth, close kinsperson of Mary, Anna, the prophetess of Asher. We don't hear much about her either. How would you like to be known as Anna, prophetess of Asher? That doesn't sound very nice. Mary, mother of Jesus, who raised Him until He was of age, asked of Him His first public miracle, visited Jesus in His ministry, and stood at the cross. that's what you got to say about Mary, Mother of Jesus. Oh. Well, you know, that's what she did. Raised him until he was of age. Is that what you want said about you on your tombstone? I raised those kids till they were of age. Asked of him his first public miracle. Visited him in his ministry. I love what he says. Now where'd it go? Oh, that was all of them. That's all the named women. And Mary was the last. Okay. Oh, my. Now, here we go, the unnamed women. Now, there's 15 of them, so we're going to do them a little faster. Peter's mother-in-law, well, by inference, that means there is a wife there not mentioned. The daughter of the ruler who was raised from the dead. He said I could point this anywhere. We'll try this. Servant girls who confronted Peter. There was two different ones. I found that interesting in my study, by the way. The woman of Canaan asking for Jesus to remove the demon from her daughter. The widow with two mites, mother of Zebedee's sons, the mourning widow with the dead son whom Jesus raised from the dead, that's a full sentence, sinful woman who washed Jesus' feet with her tears, the woman who spoke out during the sermon. Do you ever wonder why they said women keep silent in the church? Have you ever looked at that passage? Here he was. Now, just come with me for a minute here. Now, this was during the time when the Jewish women didn't get to go into the temple except in one little old place. They could go into this outer thing. And then the men who were clean could go into a little bit different one, but then only the priests could go into another one, and then only the high priest could go into the back one. So those women could only go into this nothing place out here. And they couldn't do anything about worship. Their husbands had to do all the worshiping for them. Now she has a chance to sit there at the feet of God. And she thinks she has something important to say to offer to the congregation. Isn't that just like us? Who do we think we are? We finally get a chance to sit there and shut our mouths. And she has to speak up. And she says... She's the first women's liber. She goes, blessed is the breast that fed you and the womb that held you, or something like that. She's the women's liber. And Jesus very politely says back to her, more than that, blessed are those who do what God says. Like, shut your mouth, woman. But he didn't say that. He was real, real polite about the whole thing. But I mean, who in the world did she think she was, really? Really? I mean, why do we always think we have something important to say? It's kind of our mouths, or it's my worst enemy. I know it's my worst enemy. I say that every day of my life, and here I am up here thinking I got something to say, and I don't. Let's just get on with this thing right here. And it happened as, oh, look, he put it up here. As he spoke these things, that a certain woman from the crowd raised her voice and said to him, "Blessed." Here's what she says, blessed is the womb that bore you and the breast which nursed you. But he said, more than that, blessed are those who hear the word of God and keep it. If I'd have just let the thing play out. The mourning widow with the dead son, whom Jesus raised from the dead. The sinful woman who washed Jesus' feet with her tears. And that was pretty amazing. If you think about that one very long, that's pretty. The woman who spoke out. We already did that. What are we on? The woman with a severe scoliosis. Did that just... start over again? The Samaritan woman at the well. The woman caught in adultery. The sister of Mary who stood with Mary. The sister of Mary who stood with Mary at the cross. The sisters of Jesus. The woman with a hemorrhage. She was last, huh? Oh, wait. That's jumping. I wanted to say, oh, I know, that's later. I was going to talk about that woman with the hemorrhage. I'm going to talk about her in a minute. Okay, so out of all the women then, just think about it for a minute. All those women, there was 9 who was named and 15 that didn't have a name. They were just adjectives and adverbs and all that kind of stuff about what they did in describing them. And he made long sentences out of it. Well, that's all that were deemed mentionable in the whole 4 Gospels of the life of Christ. 15 and then J.W. McGarvey tells us that possibly 3 of those, 2 of the unnamed and 1 of the named, are all Salome. Okay, so now let's see if he did this like I wanted him to. These 3 are possibly the same one. Now, isn't that interesting? This is the most interesting part of the study for me when I went back studying all these ladies and picking out the ladies of the 4 Gospels. And many women who followed Jesus, this comes from the 4 Gospels as we're looking at who was standing at the cross. And he actually, in McGarvey, in his book, was when it was the calling of the apostles and the relationship of the people where I found this. So it wasn't even when I was doing my study of the cross thing. And many women who followed Jesus from Galilee, ministering to him, were there looking on from afar, among whom were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Joseph, and the mother of Zebedee's sons. Now don't get that confused with James and John, just that's a coincidence. Joseph is different than James and John. And the mother of Zebedee's sons, that's who James and John were. Okay, and now from Mark. There were also women looking on from afar, among whom were Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James the Less, and of Joseph, and Salome, who also followed him and ministered to him when he was in Galilee, and many other women who came up with him to Jerusalem. Okay, those are the 2 accounts from Matthew and Mark. And here we have Luke. And the whole crowd who came together to that site, seeing what had been done, beat their breast and returned. But all his acquaintances and the women who followed him from Galilee stood at a distance watching these things. And John. Now there stood by the cross of Jesus his mother and his mother's sister, Mary the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus therefore saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing by, he said to his mother, "Woman, behold your son." Then he said to the disciple, "Behold your mother." And from that hour, that disciple took her to his own home. Now, in this McGarvey's book, it was clarified to me, and I think it might clarify it to you if you haven't studied it. Okay, taking Matthew's version, you have Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and isn't that cool what he did there? And the Mary the son, mother of the sons of Zebedee. Okay, now Mark, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James and Joseph, and Salome. Actually, in Mark it says the James the Less and Joseph. And then Luke just talks about the women of Galatia. Okay, and John talks about his mother, which the others didn't mention, but we know she was there. And Mary Magdalene, and Mary the wife of Clopas, and the sister of Jesus' mother. Now, when I was younger, I always assumed, because of the way John is worded, that it's talking about Mary Magdalene, Mary the wife of Clopas, and the sister of Jesus' mother being the same person, kind of tied together, because I thought there had to be 3 and 3 and 3. But this cleared it up for me. And if you see that put in these columns, you can see that Mary the wife of Clopas was also Mary the mother of James and Joseph, and that the mother of the sons of Zebedee was also the sister of Jesus' mother and was Salome. Now, if you think about that for a minute, and now go back to the relationships of all the things that happened in the 4-fold Gospels, that's incredible. Because when the mother of the sons of Zebedee came and approached Jesus and said, "When you come to your kingdom, remember my sons," She was thinking, you are my nephew, and these are your cousins. That kind of puts a little different slant on that one, doesn't it? And when you think of him standing at the cross and looking down at John standing beside his mother and his aunt, he was asking his cousin, who was probably older than his brothers, who weren't believers anyway yet, to take care of his aunt. But interestingly, God doesn't put much value on blood kin like we do. We as women put a lot of value on blood kin. That's really dear to us. When we bear those children, we hold those children dear to our hearts. And we hold our family dear to our hearts, don't we? So if it was us writing, if it was from human standpoints, we'd be all about telling the cousinships and the aunts and uncleships and all that. But with divine inspiration, who are my mother and my brothers? Those that follow and do my will. That's who they are. So it wasn't worth mentioning to us. Not worth mentioning, but it kind of clarifies some things to us. If you put it on the chart and then understand from where they were coming from. Now let's look at the attributes of these women, because that's what it's all about. Okay. When you think of dedicated, I think of these three most of all in there. I think probably all of the women can probably have all these attributes, but these especially were mentioned over and over, so that, you know, you kind of have to highlight them. In three of the Gospels, they were mentioned at least three times. Committed. Now, I put a different three, and I put Joanna and Susanna because it says that after they were all healed of the demons, and that would make you more committed, they gave of their means to help his ministry. That's the kind of different level of commitment when you give of your family means, right? Courageous. These are the women that stepped up to the plate when all the men fled. They followed him to his trial and to the cross, right? Well, the top four stayed near enough to talk to him. I put valor as separate because valor is a different it's a different level of courageousness. I think you're courageous. A lot of people will step up to the bat. If your husband's a minister or an elder, you know that a lot of people will jump on board at first, and then if it going gets a little bit tough, they just kind of fall out like water all around you. And then there's just a few, just a handful that you can count on to stand with you. Those are the people of valor that I'm talking about. Well, when push came to shove and he was actually hanging on the cross, these were the ones that were there, right? So the others were standing afar. They were still courageous enough to be around. They didn't completely forsake him like the men did. That's something, ladies. That's something. Of course, they probably wouldn't have been strung up like the men would have. And they probably knew that. You know, I have to give them that. It hasn't been that many societies that string women up that readily. So we won't give them too much on that. But humble. You have to look at Jesus' mother as humble. I mean, after all, her reputation. I don't know how you'd feel about being told that, you know, that you had been chosen for that. And then the consequence of that was that everybody was going to go, you know, and all that, all the rest of her life, and it never stopped. And then you have to watch your son be crucified. Oh, she was humble. The woman with the hemorrhage. You know, no matter, you're trying to reach that garment and step out there, what if somebody sees you or knows? That's humble. Mary, the sister of Lazarus, because she washed his feet, and the other woman who washed his feet with her and dried her feet with her hair. When the men were all you know, saying stuff. I wouldn't want to do that. Martha, she was a servant because she made the meal. Mary, the sister of Lazarus, for washing his feet. The other woman, and then Mary Magdalene and Joanna, who came to anoint him. And that, you know, that was servant stuff. I think all of these women go for all these things, though. The women of Galatia, I think they were pretty cool. You know, those women in particular, they thought they were going to go see him made king. You know? They were ready to go and sacrificial. Mary, Mother of Jesus, Mary Magdalene, Susanna, because they took from their own means. Thoughtful, okay. Woman with a hemorrhage, here it comes. This is the part that I thought, okay. I did a long study on this. In Leviticus, read this with me. Now, remember, Jesus lived under this law. If a woman has a discharge and the discharge from her body is blood, she shall be set apart 7 days, and whoever touches her shall be unclean until evening. Everything that she lies on during her impurity shall be unclean. Also, everything she sits on shall be unclean. Whoever touches her bed shall wash his clothes and bathe in water and be unclean till evening. And whoever touches anything that she sat on shall wash his clothes and bathe in water and be unclean until evening. If anything is on her bed or on anything on which she sits, when he touches it, he shall be unclean till evening. And if any man lies with her at all, so that her impurity is on him, he shall be unclean 7 days, and every bed on which he lies shall be unclean. If a woman has a discharge of blood for many days, and this was her because it was 7 years, other than at the time of her customary impurity, or if it runs beyond her usual time of impurity, all the days of her unclean discharge shall be as the days of her customary impurity. She shall be unclean. Every bed on which she lies all the days of her discharge shall be as to her as the bed of her impurity, and whatever she sits on shall be unclean as the uncleanliness of her impurity. Whoever touches these things shall be unclean. He shall wash his clothes and bathe in water and be unclean till evening. But if she is cleansed of her discharge, then she shall count for herself 7 days, and after that she shall be clean. This poor woman lived like that 7 years. Can you imagine her marital state? If her husband knew her only 1 day a week, he was unclean for 7 days. He couldn't sit at the gates. He couldn't go to the temple. Their marriage must have been in trouble for 7 years. That puts a different slant on that story, doesn't it? Now, think of her. You think of how embarrassed she must have been to approach Jesus, and we think of that right off the bat as women. But I think she was thinking of this too. I think that woman was thoughtful. It wouldn't have been a sin for him to touch her, but he would have had to be unclean if he had to touch her to heal her. So she touched the hem of his garment. How thoughtful was that? Yeah, she was probably embarrassed, but I think she was also thinking of him. So that's really pretty incredible of the woman. I tell you, I'm so glad we don't live under that law. I needed a hysterectomy. And if any of y'all needed a hysterectomy and had that, man, can you imagine how much washing went on in that household? I mean, the bed sheets and on, and the chairs. Okay, flexible and spontaneous. The women of Galatia, because they packed all their stuff and were ready to go at a moment's notice, and they were flexible because, well, if they were all prepared. Now, if you're prepared for a coronation and instead it's a crucifixion, I think you have to be kind of flexible. I don't know. It just kind of strikes me that way. Yeah, I mean, you pack one way and you go another. And what about the Mount of Olives? These women evidently were at the Mount of Olives because they followed him everywhere. They went right with him, and they were on the scene immediately. So one wonders if they camped out. Interesting. I don't know. I kind of like to put myself in the position of each one of them. I guess that's where I'm going with this. And as I think through it, I think, wow, these women were something. They're the kind of women you want to have to dinner. The priorities, they all had their priorities straight, you know? They knew what was what and where was where. Otherwise, they wouldn't have even been mentioned. Well, I guess we can leave the woman out that was spoke out in the service, can't we? Well, I don't know, you know. Principled, they were very principled women, you know? You know, my grandpa used to say, gather up your skirts and run, you know? Don't just be half-hearted about what you do. If you're going to do it, just gather up your skirts and run, you know? And I like that. It sticks with, it comes from the old Western days whenever, you know, if the wagon trains were going and you got scattered kind of behind and you were just kind of drooping going along, and the ones up front would look back and go, you know, come on, just gather up your skirts and run, right? Oh, it just came on, didn't it? It's still going. Comforting, nurturing, attentive, respectful, all of them, yeah, all of them. All of this comes down to, wow, look what he did there. Ta-da! You can sum them all up. Impressive, Dave. Dedicated, committed, courageous, valor, humble, servants, eager, sacrificial, thoughtful. Pretty good women, huh? Yeah, I like those for friends. Good girlfriends, huh? Oh, now if I can just be like that. I asked him to put in here. Let's see if he did it. Yes. Okay. My grandpa, the one I keep telling you about, was a really good man. He was an orphan. And he raised his 7 younger brothers, and he converted all their siblings, and he started 13 Churches of Christ, and he converted his wife, raised 7 children to be Christians, and converted all their mates. So he had a strong teaching ability, and he taught me this when I was 8. And it ties in. Who is God? God is love. God is all the different adjectives. He's the ruler and the judge, and he's all-powerful and omniscient and omnipotent and on and on and on, but he is love. And what is love? 1 John 4:7-8, God is love, and love is, wow. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. The key word in this is what? He gave that. He so loved us that, what? That he gave. Okay, now that's not like I give you a Christmas present and you give me a Christmas present. That's not the kind of giving that this is. This is the kind of giving that I step on your toe and I burn your house down and you send God down to stand up for me. And let him live on earth and I can spit on him and put him up on a tree. That's that kind of love. Okay, that's a different kind of love than we understand. So that kind of love, wow, impressive. Okay. Selfless giving. That kind of love is called selfless giving. Selfless versus selfish. This is the devil. And this is Jesus. So we have opposites. So, if it's 180 degrees, now there's a little red thing. Okay, so if this is the kind of giving that God and Jesus are capable of, and this is the kind of giving that Satan is capable of, and God is love, and 180 degrees, the opposite would be that Satan is hate. And if God is giving, then Satan would be taking. And so you end up with selfless love of God and the selfish nature of Satan. Okay, so there's your two extremes. Now, we're someplace in between. We're not as bad as Satan, and we're not as good as God. We've got the Ten Commandments in between here, is what Grandpa put. Now, all these things I knew at 8 years old. So this is actually a very simple lesson that he gave me. You notice here, you shall have no other gods before me, have no graven images, not take the Lord's name in vain, remember the Sabbath, and honor your father and mother. Do y'all notice what those have in common? Man to God. Authority. The second ones. You shall not murder, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, and you shall not covet. Now the Pharisees came to Jesus in Matthew 22, and they said, tongue in cheek, Master, what's the greatest command? They thought they were going to trick him, catch him in something, that he couldn't come up with the greatest command. And his answer was, love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind. And equal, likened to it, equal to it, love your neighbor as yourself. Okay? Love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and mind. And love your neighbor as yourself. He summed them up. And then he says so. He goes on in Matthew 22 and says so. For hangs all the law and the prophets on these two commands. So you can hang the whole Bible on those two commands. So those women, when they were being unselfish, were following the commands that were all given. And what's cool is that we have those examples. Oh, wow, he has more stuff. Okay. If I wash your feet in service and every other Christian brother or sister and every friend and neighbor and every stranger, then I'm anointing the Savior's feet and I'm bringing spices to his tomb and I'm sacrificing for the apostles and for Jesus' ministry. I get to do the same thing they got to do. And if we all do it to each other, we're all doing it unto him, right? And that is so neat that he's given us that we didn't get to see him. We didn't get to sit at his feet. We didn't get to open our big fat mouths. But we can do the very same things that these cool ladies got to do. And I consider them cool ladies that I would love to have for friends. And we can do the very same thing by doing to each other, which is what we're trying to do anyway. But isn't it nice to know why we're trying to do it so hard? And the king will answer and say to them, assuredly, I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me. And that's just too cool. And that was my study. And thank you for studying with me. And I love all y'all. This congregation is the coolest congregation. And thank you for letting me speak.